is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, in for Jen White. A dramatic reversal by the head of the U.S. Postal Service has some folks breathing a sigh of relief and others scratching their heads. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has been facing intense backlash by Democrats and some Republicans over cost-cutting moves like removing mailboxes and reducing post office hours. The measures were criticized as an attempt to disenfranchise people wanting to vote safely during the pandemic. But now, DeJoy says he's decided to wait to make the changes until after the 2020 election. Meanwhile, President Trump's repeated assaults on voting by mail remain front and center for voters. So here to talk about this is Jessica Huseman. She's an elections reporter at ProPublica. Jessica, always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Richard R. John is a professor of history and communications at Columbia Journalism School. He's also the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse. Professor John, welcome to 1A.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Jessica, bring us up to speed here with what's been happening, because there's been so much. Tell us, first of all, why people are so worried about the post office.
Yeah, sure. So I think that there are two different reasons that they're worried. One is about supplies and the other is about procedure. And the first is that there's these very visible things happening, which is that they are removing blue mailboxes from street corners, and they are also removing sorting equipment. And folks have theorized that this would slow down the counting of mail or the delivery of mail. As it relates to ballots. And I disagree with that. These changes were scheduled for months, and Mr. DeJoy had very little to do with them, and it was largely because these things were not in use, so it made sense to decommission them. But I think the thing that folks are worried about that makes more sense to me is the policy changes. So until, as you mentioned, Mr. DeJoy switched everything up,
right,
he had previously, you know, eliminated quite large bits of overtime, and then had also banned going out for a second time to finish your route if you didn't deliver all of the mail or if more mail came in midday that needed to be delivered. And so I think we can all sort of game out how that might affect ballot delivery. And so those were the major issues. But it seems as though he's pledged to stop all of that until after the election.
Professor John, what was your impression of the cost-cutting measures from the Postmaster General?
Well, my impression was very similar to Jessica's. You don't do this sort of thing, you know, right away. It's a long time frame. It was an unfortunate kind of coincidence for the incoming Postmaster General, but his silence was unsettling, and that fed this perception that something was amiss. Louis DeJoy has a long career in logistics. He's not just a fundraiser. He's a businessman. He's got a reputation. He's worried about what's on his tombstone. So I'm glad he did the right thing. I'm just surprised it took so long. And it may well be that senior administrators simply don't know how to respond in a situation where the president is fully capable of making just extraordinary pronouncements, more or less at whim, and maybe he just didn't know how to handle the situation. But I'm delighted and pleased that it seems that we're on a more stable footing, not only in terms of what's going on at the post office, but in terms of public perception, because that matters too, because the legitimacy of the election is a critical issue for all of us.
Question for you, Jessica. It comes from Marcus on our Facebook page. He says, is DeJoy planning to divest himself of his conflicts of interest, ones which financially reward him for sinking the USPS? First of all, Jessica, can you clarify, is that true?
Yeah, and Mr. DeJoy does have quite a few stock holdings in places like Amazon and also other shipping companies, and worked in private shipping for a number of years himself. And so I think what folks see here is a bit of a classic conflict of interest, but it's one that we've kind of come to expect from the Trump administration. One of his top EPA officials is a coal lobbyist. So he's been known to put folks with apparent conflicts of interest into roles in which they're overseeing agencies that they once competed against or worked for. You know, Mr. DeJoy has not made any mention of divesting himself from these things. In fact, a lot of it he bought just immediately before moving into the position. I'm sure that that if he does testify later in the week, he will be asked those questions.
And the folks accusing Trump, the Trump administration, of attempting to undermine vote by mail, do you think those concerns are valid, Jessica?
I do. You know, much like Professor John, I was very concerned about the tone Mr. DeJoyce struck as he was responding to this criticism. And I think that it can both be true that he pauses all of the processes that were in place prior to today, but also be true that he still wants to slow down vote by mail. You know, I've been covering elections for 4.5 years, and the USPS and local election officials have always worked very closely together. And ballots, even though folks usually don't pay for first class shipping, typically get first class treatment because the USPS has established sort of a informal.
We might have to get back to Jessica there, but let's move on. Postmaster General DeJoy now says that he'll delay those cost-cutting measures, as we've mentioned, until after the election. Here's a bit of his statement. He wrote in part, "I came to the Postal Service to make changes to secure the success of this organization and its long-term sustainability. I believe significant reforms are essential to that objective, and work toward those reforms will commence after the election." Professor John, what do you make of his claims that the Postal Service's long-term sustainability is in jeopardy? Is that true?
Well, this depends a lot on how you think about postal finance. First-class mail has been declining for over a decade. The internet and related changes having to do with Social Security and postal banking and the like. That market is not coming back. The package market is expanding, and that's a real kind of sign of hope for the post office. But the related issue having to do with finance, in some ways the elephant in the room, is the question of funding these pensions in the 2006 Postal Accountability Act. Those pensions, that obligation was to be paid forward. Post office is in an unusual position, if not a unique position, in the federal government. If Congress could take that liability off the ledger, the post office, according to studies I've seen within the last couple of years, the post office would be more or less breaking even. But the concept of breaking even with the post office is a tricky one, because it provides lots of services for which arguably it's not fully remunerated, and it is subject to various kinds of obligations that other organizations are not. For example, the post office can't even suspend Saturday mail delivery if the Postmaster General wanted to, for economic reasons. Now, you can say that's a good thing, we have Saturday mail delivery, that's fine. But it's the sort of thing, it's the sort of obligation that the post office is confronted with that other organizations are not. So the long-term, you know, there've been editorials recently, the long-term situation is dire and so on, so on. I think that's exaggerated. I think the institution can be put on a more sound financial footing. Congress has to step up. Congress has always been the backstop, and Congress is the one that writes the rules. Congress is the one that has to take responsibility for the current situation. So, you know, sorting equipment, certain kinds of sorting equipment may be eliminated. Other kinds of sorting equipment may be needed, as the post office provides last mile service for Federal Express and UPS. You know, this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to throw in some engagement here. We're hearing a lot from listeners. Alden emailed us and said, "The USPS provides vital, essential services to Americans. It should be viewed as a service that we need to pay for and support, not as a profit center that is in jeopardy because it is not profitable." Jessica Huseman is back with us, and I wanted your take on this. When it comes to vote by mail concerns specifically, Postmaster General DeJoy writes, "The Postal Service is ready today to handle whatever volume of election mail it receives this fall, even with the challenges of keeping our employees and customers safe and healthy as they operate amid a pandemic. We will deliver the nation's election mail on time and within our well-established service standards. The American public should know that this is our number one priority between now and Election Day." Is that true, Jessica? Do we know?
I don't know that we know. And I hope that he's asked some hard questions on Friday. I think that what we've not heard from Mr. DeJoy is sort of a tonal shift. I mean, a statement is one thing, but it will be interesting to see what he has to say in person to justify all of the changes that he's decided to make to the USPS, even if those changes have been pulled back.
Jessica, question here from Kokomo Kid. He's emailed and asked, can the dismantling of the USPS that has been done over the recent weeks quickly be reversed?
You know, I think that it can. We're not talking about gigantic seismic shifts here. We're talking about delaying overtime and pushing back second routes and then decommissioning a lot of equipment that really wasn't used very much to begin with. So, you know, it will take a little bit of time in the next few days to get rid of the backlog that I'm sure has built up in many parts of the country because overtime and second routes were not allowed. But once we get through that, I think that we should be just fine. I think it's really important for people to understand that the post office handles billions of parcels a day. And so the 100 million ballots or so that we're expecting it to deliver in November, it certainly has the capacity to do, and that has not changed.
Professor, now that he's reversed these measures, will the effects of them go away? Or are missing mailboxes going to be returning, or does his decision just kind of freeze us where we are?
I agree with Jessica. From everything that I have read, the post office can handle a ballot from every American who's eligible to vote without, you know, breaking step, if it's permitted to operate in accordance with its traditional procedures. And Mr. DeJoy is a seasoned administrator. He's a logistic expert. He should take pride, as I assume he does, in the proper functioning of the organization over which he's presiding. And he will then, now that he is clearly out front stating that we will get the job done, I have confidence. I particularly have confidence in the men and women, 500,000 of them, who work for the post office, mm-hmm. who, after all, are committed to promoting the sanctity of our electoral process.
Well, Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez isn't done with the Postmaster General. Shortly after DeJoy's announcement, she insisted he should still appear before the House of Representatives.
Postmaster DeJoy can say whatever he wants about what changes will or will not happen in the future. He has lost the trust of the American people. He has lost our trust to make sure that he will follow through. After they said that they would suspend taking mailboxes out, there were reports and there was confusion about whether that was continuing to happen or not. We need to get him under oath on a committee letting us know what is happening, and we have to undo the damage that he has already done.
Jessica, how have other members of Congress responded to his response?
You know what? Not pretty similarly. I think that this caused quite a bit of outrage. And one thing that I was surprised to see was that rural Republicans were also quite upset about the rollback of services at the post office because, you know, as has been mentioned in this hour, they perform last mile delivery for many large shipping companies. And so if you live in a rural area, the likelihood that UPS or DHL delivers to your door is very small. And so the shrinking of the post office served to sort of make those communities feel more disconnected. And I think gets back to one of the reasons that the USPS is generally viewed as a service rather than a profit machine because of communities like this that are not efficient to serve. Uniquely here, you did see some bipartisan pushback.
The Postmaster General is set to testify before Congress on Friday. What will you be wanting to hear from DeJoy's testimony? Professor, you first.
I want to hear DeJoy come out and state explicitly that this is a great American institution. It's been serving the American public for 200 years. It has a mandate that's as old as the Constitution, and that we are going to get the job done. I'm going to work with my management team. I'm going to work with every clerk. I'm going to work with every mail carrier to make it possible to fulfill the mandate that the founders intended. I want him to come out and defend public service and defend the Postal Service as an integral element of America's experiment in self-government. Whether or not he's going to do that is a good question, but that's what the institution is about. It's not about profit and loss. It's about providing essential facilities that knit us together, that bind the nation. That's what the founders intended, and that's what DeJoy should say.
Jessica?
Yeah, I very much agree. And I think that while he's emphasized that they have the capacity and the capability to do this, I would really love to hear him offer more specifics about how they intend to treat vote-by-mail ballots differently than other mail, regardless of how it's stamped or the level of service that customers have paid for.
MJ emailed us and said, Trump is trying to cheat and suppress the vote by hobbling the post office so it can't function efficiently. Even if his benefactor, who he installed as postmaster, stops his manipulations now, damage has been done that must be reversed. Big sorting machines have been removed and should be put back in use. The mail must move efficiently for the upcoming election. Jessica, about 30 seconds here. What's feeding these suspicions?
You know, I think it's a cataclysm of things. Donald Trump has been very vocal about vote by mail, and then folks see these gigantic sorting machines that they assume are in use leaving busy post office. And so I think that because the removal of the blue boxes and the sorters are so visible, people have really focused on those. But again, those probably won't have much impact at all. The real impact is the policy changes.
Well, we are speaking with Jessica Huseman. She is an elections reporter at ProPublica. And Richard R. John is with us as well for the hour. He's professor of history and communications at Columbia Journalism School. He's also the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse. Coming up, we are going to talk more about the Postal Service and the concerns surrounding this saga. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/1A to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Friends, how many of us have them? So if you're lucky, you have friendships that are affirming and that are like a place for you to be a fuller version of yourself. So why is it that so few of us have friends of different races? Listen now on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.
Now let's get back to our conversation about the Postal Service. We're speaking with Jessica Huseman. She's an elections reporter at ProPublica. And Richard R. John is professor of history and communications at Columbia Journalism School. Also the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse. Professor John, can you talk about the history of the USPS, their financial problems specifically?
Well, the Postal Service is older than the Constitution, so this is it's a question with a couple of parts. In the early Republic, the Post Office briefly generated revenue. It was never the mandate of the organization to generate revenue. 1851 to the 1960s, lost money every year. But again, that was not a concern outside of a few insiders in Congress because it was presumed to be a service. In fact, as a service, it was understood to be in some way superior to business. Service provided facilities for ordinary people that no business could match. This changes in 1970, the founding of the United States Postal Service. Organization is no longer a line item on the federal budget. Organization is supposed to find ways to balance its books. That would include subventions from Congress for special services. But Congress did not limit the kind of services, the kind of facilities that it provided, especially in rural areas. And because it did that wisely, it remains a service today. That mm-hmm. is to say, no business could do the kinds of things the post office does.
Well, Tony sent us an email. He's a 35-year veteran carrier. He says, claiming the post office cannot handle the election mail is preposterous. We have the infrastructure to handle much more in one day than the amount of election mail could add, even without some of the machines that have been removed. My mail route has 600 deliveries. One day I can have 2,500 pieces of letter mail processed by machines, and the next day only 500. An extra 600 or 1,200 pieces added to the stream is nothing. This isn't new to us. Well, yesterday, 1A's own Jen White hosted a special 1A edition of Stateside on Michigan Radio, and she asked Politico's Tim Alberta about the state of that state's election ground game.
What's the expectation about whether or not the state is prepared to handle whatever in-person voting people want to do? There's been concern about long lines at polling sites. What do we know about how prepared Michigan is for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, in my view, it almost seems to be getting lost in the shuffle over all of this furor over the post office. The fact that on primary day in Michigan, the real problem was on the ground with staffing at some of these election centers, particularly in Wayne County, where you had, I think it was 7 or 8 different precincts that were understaffed, some of them to the point of needing to close down for short periods of time until they could rush backup emergency staffers there. And that was largely chalked up to COVID-19, of course, and people who had been at one point signed up to volunteer for a shift as a poll official pulled out, or they were unable to make it, or they tried to communicate that they couldn't make it, but that communication didn't apparently make it to the top. And so that is, at least to me, because of what we've seen with the relatively smooth transition to no excuse absentee voting, the in-person voting in some of these precincts where you have traditions of long lines, of poor staffing, of subpar execution at the local level, and voters who have time and again voiced their frustration with it and who have felt fed up, and that may be no small reason why you saw voter turnout diminishing significantly in 2016 in some of these areas. That, to me, at least in Michigan, would strike me as an even bigger source of concern, particularly for the Democratic Party, than this uproar over mail balloting, which I think really, at the end of the day, is not the huge source of heartburn that some would lead you to believe it is, because at the end of the day, these votes are going to be counted whether President Trump likes it or not. He can say whatever he wants to, but ultimately, the Secretary of State has the power to count these ballots.
Jessica, does Michigan's situation sound familiar? I mean, before we get back to the Postal Service, tell us what's the state of in-person voting right now?
Right. So, I think that counties are all in similar situations. They're losing poll workers by the minute as they drop out due to concerns over COVID-19, and they're also losing polling locations. I think what people don't realize is that the vast majority of polls are private businesses or publicly owned facilities, many of which might be closed right now and uninclined to reopen to allow members of the public in during a pandemic. The best case scenario I have heard is that a county lost 25% of its polling locations. And that is among the better situations. Wow. So, I think that in-person voting is in real trouble. I think the expansion of vote by mail is going to help that. But as the recording you just played mentioned, there are voters that are going to have to vote in person. I'm in Texas, and they chose not to expand vote by mail for those under the age of 65. And so if I want to vote, I'm going to have to show up at the polls. And I think that Texas is better suited than most states to handle that, because we've been opening polling locations this entire time. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of states that just don't have the resources.
Professor John, Michael emailed us to ask about the Postal Act of 2006. He says, what was the GOP trying to do with this legislation? I've heard they were profitable prior to it.
Right. This is a good question. It was a voice vote. Historians haven't gone into the archives. So far, I'm guessing here. I am speculating. there are lawmakers, especially Republicans, who believe that the post office could be run better as a corporation, as a non-government entity. My suspicion is that the obligation was put on the post office to make it more attractive for outsiders to take it over, because it wouldn't have that huge liability, because that liability pension would already be funded. Now, I should underscore, this is a speculation. We haven't done the research yet, but it was unfortunate. There may not have been as much thought given to it by lawmakers as a whole, but it has saddled the post office with an obligation that makes it appear that it is in a much worse financial position than in fact it is, and that is unfortunate. The whole debate is unfortunate about profit and loss, about bottom line. It's a service. The water company, we don't expect to make money. National parks, we don't expect to make money. Mm-hmm. You don't expect the military to make money, and so on.
Jessica, President Trump is a big fan of saying, you know, with no evidence, that mail-in voting will lead to widespread election fraud. Is this true?
No, it's not true. I think that it is sort of bipartisanly accepted that vote by mail has a slightly higher rate of fraud, but that assumes that fraud is happening at all. Voter fraud is exceedingly rare. And the instances in which you hear about fraud perpetrated through the mail or by ballots that voters received in the mail is generally orchestrated by a campaign or some other organized group, making it more about election fraud than voter fraud. But voters are certainly not doing this themselves. And even those you know, examples of election fraud, like North Carolina 9 last year, are exceedingly rare. Elections are almost never overturned, and the folks who attempt to do this fraud are almost always caught. So I think that those concerns are a bit overwrought.
So what do you think that we should be concerned with? What's the real thing to be concerned about when it comes to mail-in voting?
You know, I think the real thing to be concerned about is just that you turn your ballot around as soon as you can. I think that there are a lot of states that have really deeply unrealistic deadlines for requests for absentee ballots. For example, in Ohio, you can, in theory, request an absentee ballot up to the Saturday before the election, which is obviously unrealistic. You cannot process a ballot application, send you a ballot, and get your ballot back in a couple of days. That's just not how the USPS works. And so you should ignore close deadlines, and as soon as you're comfortable sending your ballot back in, you should send it back in, or you should take it upon yourselves to drive it to a drop box that's going to be directly accessed by the elections office. And as long as people are voting as early as they can, they should be just fine.
Well, we have to take another quick break, but we'll talk more about the post office with our guests and with you right after this. Stay close. This is 1A.
We're only months away from Election Day, and every week, or even every few hours, there's a new twist that could affect who will win the White House. To keep up with the latest, tune in to the NPR Politics Podcast every day to find out what happened and what it means for the election.
This is 1A. We've been talking about the post office and just how politicized the service has gotten rather quickly. Professor John, would you say that it's common for presidents to politicize the post office?
No. I've been racking my brain to try to find previous examples, and it's extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. I've gone all the way back to Andrew Jackson,
wow.
1828 election, and then the abolitionist mails controversy, 1835. But president after president talks about the post office laudatory terms. I was going through Richard Nixon, his response to the wildcat strike in 1970. In the midst of the biggest wildcat strike in American history, the president, who's not obviously sympathetic to unions, is lauding the post office. That's the way presidents typically talk about this venerable, essential American institution. So it's very, very strange that our current president called the post office a joke. What an insult to the 500,000 people who work for the post office, ostensibly under the direction of, you know, at some level, mm-hmm. of the President of the United States. It's insulting. It's un-American to make a very a bold claim about it historically. And it is threatening to the legitimacy of our self-experiment and self-government.
Well, Sam tweeted us and he says, folks have been arguing that the government should not save the Postal Service because the free market will be able to fix it on its own. Jessica, can you talk about how that thinking may be flawed?
Right. So I think that folks like to think that's true if they've never lived in or visited a rural area of this country. I think, you know, the founders envisioned the USPS to sort of bind America together, to make it possible for us to exchange ideas and items across the country. And while suburban and urban communities would probably be fine relying on the free market to do the job of the USPS, rural communities would absolutely not. And, you know, there is a lot of power in a free market to decide where they will and will not deliver to. And you know, if you live in an area where a taxi cab won't pick you up, it stands to reason that maybe private shipping companies don't want to go there either. And so if you give a private company the authority to dictate its own terms instead of providing a service to all Americans, you will quickly find that service being taken away from the areas that are not profitable or not time worthy to go to.
Mm-hmm. Professor Ben emailed us and says, my letter carrier and I were talking about the USPS's current situation just yesterday. He believes that this is yet another face of racism in our country. He claims that there are disproportionate numbers of people of color working for the Postal Service, and therefore he concludes that the powers that be view it as a workplace that is dispensable. Any chance that there's some truth to this viewpoint?
Well, certainly right, certainly correct that African Americans are disproportionately represented in the postal workforce. For many decades, one of the only middle-class jobs that an African American could get was in the post office, and that's lore well known in the African American community. So that's absolutely true. Veterans also, by the way, are overrepresented. So it's possible. I think the larger issue is, and really to back up a moment, why so much furor about the post office? In a way, it's a good thing because it shows how connected the institution is to our elected officials, Congress. They're used to taking the heat, and how essential it is viewed by ordinary Americans, how they're willing to step up. So it may well be that African-American postal workers have an ally in sort of the great mass of Americans who maybe they don't know that disproportionate number of African-Americans work for the post office, but they do know, and Jessica's absolutely right, if you live in a rural area, I've been on talk radio, conservative talk radio, in rural areas, they're very concerned about their local post office. It's never been a partisan issue, red state, blue state, Democrat, Republican. In fact, it's only become an issue now, not because a political party has taken it up, but because a president has taken it up, mm-hmm. who, for whatever reason, makes outrageous statements that are out of line with American tradition.
We're almost out of time, but Jessica, I want you to just clarify for us, you know, how much sway would you say that the president himself has over post office policy?
Well, I mean, I think that that depends on how close the Postmaster General and the president are. And in this case, they're quite close.
Very,
and so
yeah.
I imagine Trump is pretty influential, you know, but it does take quite a lot of power to steer a ship with that many people on it. It's a huge institution. Things aren't going to change overnight.
And, you know, who does have the most power to implement new policies at the post office?
I mean, I guess that's going to be Mr. DeJoy,
yeah.
You know, unless Congress steps in and does something about it. And it's really, as Professor John said earlier in the segment, this is really Congress's burden to bear. They need to step up and finance the institution, or at least help it remain solvent.
Well, a lot of engagement coming in, as I mentioned, some that we won't get to. But, you know, Lori writes to us and says, DeJoy has already done damage he won't undo. So we'll have to see how this plays out. That was Jessica Huseman talking with us. She's an elections reporter with ProPublica. Always a pleasure, Jessica.
Thanks so much.
And Richard R. John is professor of history and communications at Columbia Journalism School. He's also the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse. Thanks, Professor.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Katie Klein and Hector Alejandro Arzate. And this podcast is produced by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Jen White will be back tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.